You are listening to Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. This is Nechama from Nechama Photography.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 111. Does portrait orientation have a future? In this episode, Sigma is developing for E-mount finally, Olympus on the limitations of stabilization, Hensel 1-ups Profoto, Instagram drops a new feature, DJI best GoPro's Karma drone, and listener Jack in Santa Rosa, California wants to know what happened to portrait orientation. All that and more in episode 111 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Nahama, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, sister. New York City-based headshot and portrait photographer Nahama Leitner is one to watch, let me tell you. In 2015, her college thesis project called 26 Faces allowed her into the lives of 26 individuals who shared with her an emotional moment from their lives, which she captured in their portrait. Of this project, Nahama says, quote, "Creating this project, I found how much I loved working with people, hearing their stories, and finding that priceless moment. I realized how much I didn't want the project to end. From there, I decided to never stop shooting." End quote. Her photography, lighting, and retouching are beautiful, and I want you to check that out for yourself. And to do that, you can head on over to her website at nahamaphotography.com. Nahama is spelled N-E-C-H-A-M-A, by the way. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 111 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you hitting that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode, as well as telling your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Today's listener question comes from Jack, who wants to know what happened to portrait orientation.
Hi, Sharky. This is Jack in Santa Rosa, California, and I just got done listening to 106 episodes of the Petapixel Podcast. I'm talking about binge listening. Anyway, I do have a question for you, and that's what has happened to the portrait format. So with the demise decline of magazines and the ubiquitous square format of Instagram, I seem to be seeing less and less portrait orientation, even for headshots. A lot of headshot portraits are done in landscape format with the subject offset by rule of thirds. But anyway, does the portrait orientation have a future anymore? That's my question. And again, I'm really looking forward to listening to the next 106 episodes. Well done, and thank you so much. Bye.
First, thank you so much for your question, Jack. You know, we have a ginormous but very, very shy audience, and I'm hoping that we'll get more audio questions going forward so I can answer them here on the show. And to do that, of course, head on over to petapixel.com/podcast and hit that voicemail widget, please. All right, on to your question, brother. You know, I smiled and nodded my head when I heard your question because not 3 months ago, tops, I was chatting with a friend about this topic. The very reason we refer to portrait orientation in photography for verticals and landscape orientation for horizontals is because traditionally, one would shoot each of those things that way, right? People are vertical, of course, so that's how they've been painted, drawn, and photographed over the centuries. And landscapes, of course, are vistas that go left to right. You know, they're horizontal. They don't go vertically. That's usually buildings, people, etc. You know, you'd think that with most of us using devices which are mostly in vertical orientation, and I'm talking about smartphones mostly here, that there'd be a resurgence of vertically oriented portraiture, but there's not. Sure, we could use those horizontally, but most don't. You know, unless you're watching videos, you're going to hold them the way they're meant to be, which is vertical. And yet, we see mostly horizontally shot or at least cropped portraits. Why? Two words: Peter Hurley. It's all Peter Hurley's fault. Just kidding, Peter. Peter has nothing to do with it. You know, people have been shooting portraiture horizontally for a long time. He's definitely made it really popular, though. There's no doubt about it. But it's not Peter's fault. Honestly, I think it just comes down to one thing, and that's comfort. One thing I've learned over the years is that people, and that includes myself, will often take the path of least resistance. Our cameras are most comfortably shot horizontally, right? If you want to shoot vertically, you have to do that move where your arm is up in the air, and that just makes your arm tired over time. Or you have to buy a vertical grip. And if you get the one from your camera maker, you're often out $300 or $400, and that's just not cool. Most people don't want to pay that much just to shoot vertically. Now, you mentioned Instagram, but since it broke out of the square format just over a year ago in August 2015, we see portrait and landscape orientations aplenty on that service. I scrolled through my feed and I see a good mix of both, but you know what? Most portraits seem to be in landscape orientation, as you've noticed. I think with all the megapixels that we have in our cameras, and you know, most people have 24 on up these days, and with people delivering files that are most likely destined for Facebook or Instagram, rather than large prints that they're going to put on their wall, they've learned that you can just crop away half the frame if you need to. And instead of 24 megapixels, you've got 12 megapixels, and that's still plenty for what they're going to be on, which is smartphones and tablets, or maybe someone's laptop screen. I tell you, this is probably the only photography podcast where you'll hear that the answer to your question is laziness. But it's true. Or maybe it's just practicality. I don't know. Why shoot vertically if you can shoot horizontally and have some croptions? That's right. I said it. Croptions. Some cropping options. Did I just coin that? Maybe I did. I don't know. In all seriousness, though, I think that's mainly why. That, and I think that most people that are shooting in the last decade or so are not full-time professionals, of course. So you've got a massive amount of people who are mostly hobbyists who are shooting the way they see most people using a camera, and that's horizontally. Again, that's how they're designed to be shot, is mostly horizontally, right? I think that people get those images into somewhat zippier but still turtle slow Lightroom. They crop it. Everything looks good. No one complains about the photo. And then that's how they shoot, you know, until the mood strikes them to go vertically sometime. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, when I was taught to do portraiture, it was mostly in the vertical portrait orientation, of course. But these days, I've got to admit, I'm mostly shooting people horizontally. And that's because of that resolution headroom I talked about. Now, I own vertical grips, but honestly, I prefer to shoot horizontally because it's just more comfortable that way. And I feel limited when I shoot vertically. You know, it's just kind of too narrow to me. And part of that might have been having shot medium format as well many years ago. I just don't like being constrained when shooting vertically. When you've got all that real estate available to you when you shoot horizontally, it just makes more sense to shoot it that way and then crop as you need to. Now, as you mentioned, another reason is due to the rule of thirds. Many heard that that was a thing, which it is. So they apply that to everything they shoot, even portraits, which don't necessarily benefit from that. And I don't think we're going to see that change anytime soon. You know, most people are shooting horizontally, and I think it's going to stay that way unless all cameras have built-in grips like the flagship bodies do, and people feel the need to play around and change up their shots. But that's okay. There's nothing wrong with shooting in landscape orientation and giving yourself the room to crop a vertical if that's what you desire. For those that are newer to photography, this is actually a really comforting way to go. And you know what? I think there's a lot of merit in doing so. I think that professional portrait photographers who know that they want a vertical will always shoot it that way, though. You know, if they've got 24 megapixels available to them, they're going to throw all of those at that frame. That way they can get the most resolution out of it, and they have a lot of options when it comes to making large prints, right? There's something to be said about retaining as much resolution as you can, of course. Thank you so much for your question. I greatly appreciate it. I'm not sure I solved anything here. You know, the answer might be for an entirely different reason. Maybe even Peter Hurley. Nah, it's not Peter, I promise. Next. You know, I've always wondered what the practical limitations were for image stabilization, whether it's in lenses or in camera, especially since in recent years, we seem to be maxing out at like 3 to 4 stops, right? But not in the Olympus OMD EM1 Mark II, though. That's 6.5 stops, but you need a compatible lens to go along with it. Otherwise, it's not quite that much. And word from Olympus is that 6.5 is pretty much where things are going to be topping out unless there's a huge breakthrough in technology. And the reason for that is the Earth's rotation, which is hopefully not going to be changing anytime soon. 6.5 stops is a lot, of course. And when you think about it, as time goes by, we keep getting higher and higher usable ISOs. So image stabilization, while helpful, is maybe not as crucial as it used to be. Don't get me wrong, with cleaner, higher ISOs and image stabilization, you could really do some damage. You know, suddenly you can pretty much get a nice image in just about any room. Now, when it comes to sports, stabilization is, of course, useless to you. If you've got it turned on, turn it off immediately. It's not doing you any favors at all. It's actually causing you to miss shots while the stabilization tries to do its thing. So turn that off and you will definitely get more keepers. Olympus Deputy Division Manager Satsuya Katayoka recently did an interview with amateur photographer, and when he was asked about Olympus Sync IS, the system that teams up in-body image stabilization with the stabilization in their lenses, he said, quote, "The in-body stabilization itself gives 5.5 stops, and the Sync IS gives 6.5 stops with OIS lenses. 6.5 stops is actually a theoretical limitation at the moment due to rotation of the Earth interfering with gyro stabilizers," end quote. Now, knowing a little bit about physics, I don't think it makes much sense to invest the dollars necessary to try to overcome such great limitations like the Earth's rotation, especially when you can lean on the advancements in sensor technology that are there to save the day for you. Seriously, it's getting to the point where we have all the ISO that we need in our cameras. And from here on out, those ISOs are just going to keep on getting cleaner and cleaner. Someday, the digital snowstorm that is 102,400 ISO will look as clean as ISO 100 does right now. That's going to be awesome. Think about what that's going to do for people's photography. I mean, it's just amazing. If you're a mom or dad trying to get images of your kid in your house and the lighting isn't that great, or maybe you just have the lights turned down, it's almost bedtime, whatever, you're going to be able to get great images at 102,400 someday. Now, if you have kids now, by the time that happens, they're going to be all grown up and gone. So this is for future parents. This is for you younger people that are listening right now. And 6.5 stops is really about all you're going to need. I think it's unrealistic to think that people are going to be hand-holding shots for multiple seconds on end to get the photo when they can just jack that ISO way up or grab a tripod, right? Hey, if you think about it, maybe the tripod is long for this world. In a decade or whatever it is when the Nikon D8 comes out, watch for them to use hashtag goodbye tripod in their marketing campaign. Okay, it's not like many people are using the D5 with a tripod right now, but still, suspend disbelief here. Cameras are getting better, technology is getting better, and just imagine what we're going to have in a decade. I mean, it just blows my mind. Maybe people will concentrate on composition and making better images than the technology, because everyone at that point is going to have the latest and greatest technology. Imagine that, working on your photography to improve it. What a concept, right? Next. If you're a photographer and you're not on Instagram, I'm going to say it again. You're missing out. There really is a lot that you can do on that platform, I tell you. I just crossed 18,000 followers on Instagram myself, and it is a wonderful way of not only showing your work, but being inspired by others as well. Entire businesses and careers have been made using Instagram. Now, the recent pinch and zoom feature is mostly useless, but they've given us a feature now that is way more useful, and that's the ability to create a post and save it as a draft to post later. What would be really useful, though, if they allowed us to schedule those posts. You know, not all of us are up at an appropriate hour for posting something when we're creative. I tend to think of stuff at 3-4 o'clock in the morning, and that's not exactly the best time that you want to post something if you want a lot of people to see it. I'm LensShark on Instagram and everywhere else, and if you want to see my photos that I'm posting these days that I shot with my Nikon D500 and that awesome new Fujifilm X-T2, thanks again, DigiDirect, that is where you want to follow me. Instagram keeps rolling out cool new features that are great for photographers. You know, Facebook seems to be on the decline when it comes to photographers. Twitter, of course, is mostly words and is hard to keep up with and a hot mess. So Instagram is where it's at. If you don't have an Instagram account yet, create one and follow me over there. I'd love to be the first person you follow. Next. This news is a bit surprising because I wonder what took them so darn long here. maker of really incredible lenses, Sigma, has announced that they'll finally be making lenses for full-frame Sony E-mount bodies, the FE lenses as they're called, while working just fine on a Sony a6300 and other crop bodies, really shine on bodies like the a7R Mark II and the a7S Mark II. And it's really surprising because other lens makers have been making lenses for E-mount for quite some time now. In fact, you've heard me mention countless times here on the show while reporting on other lens releases that they're often available for Canon EF, Nikon F, and Sony E-mounts. I often cited that as a reason for why Sony was so darn popular, the fact that everyone was making E-mount glass for them. You know, lens makers saw a great opportunity to make piles of cash by developing those lenses for Sony E-mount, because Sony's been selling cameras like there's no tomorrow, unlike Canon and Nikon and a bunch of the other companies out there. They've actually been making great profits thanks to the Sony E-system. So for a while now, if you wanted a Sigma lens on your Sony E-mount body, you had to use an adapter. You had to get it in either Canon or Nikon mount. And Sigma also makes their lenses in the Sigma mount as well. Sigma mount, you say? Yes, Sigma actually makes some really great cameras. You just don't ever see anybody using them, do you? It's kind of like those Nikon ones and the Canon EOS M system. Does anybody know anybody that shoots with those? I never see anybody shooting with those, ever. Company president Kazuto Yamaki, in an interview with French website Focus Numerique, said this when asked if Sigma would make lenses for Sony E-mount. This is a Google translation, by the way, but you get the idea here. He said, quote, "The future of FE mount is beaming. So yes, we will come out with FE mount objectives in the future. I personally bought an A7R Mark II to understand the performance and capabilities of the Sony hybrids. I normally use our own devices with the Foveon sensor, but from time to time, I buy new innovative devices, game-changing cameras," end quote. So that's encouraging news to those that are using Sony cameras, because Sigma makes incredible glass. You know, so does Sony and Zeiss and others, but Sigma is just knocking it out of the park. They've got great, great stuff out there. I own two Sigma lenses myself, and they're wonderful. I love them. You know, there's a lot of smart people over there at Sigma, and developing for E-mount, further proof of that. Next. This past week, Profoto announced its D2, the world's fastest TTL monolite. Well, now Hensel has upped the game a bit with its Cedo 500, the world's fastest monolite. Fastest non-TTL, we should say. And these specs are cray-cray, let me tell you. The new Cedo 500 has a max flash duration of 1/100,000th of a second and a max burst of 40 flashes per second. That smokes the already impressive Profoto D2s, which are 1/63,000th of a second and 20 flashes per second. Now, it doesn't do TTL, like I said, but if that doesn't matter to you, but speed does, the Hensel may be just what gets your dollars. The Cedo 500's power settings can be adjusted from 2 to 500 watt seconds, yielding a full 9 stops of latitude. Hensels, like Profoto's, are top-notch, so there's no doubt it's going to be a great option for people that need that kind of quality. And of that, Hensel says, quote, "All Cedo 500s are manufactured and assembled at Hensel Visit in Würzburg, and then each is thoroughly evaluated and tested for functionality. The quality of material and workmanship is outstanding, and the quality all-metal housing convinces with its straightforward design as well as its look and feel," end quote. They haven't yet announced when it's going to be available nor how much it'll go for, but it's going to cost quite a lot of money, of course. Just not as much as those Profoto D2 units. If you shoot with monolights, you know how helpful it is to have a really fast flash duration. That's what freezes the motion, and with these units, that's not going to be a problem. Well, if you got the kind of cash to afford these, of course. Next. I recently told you all about Karma, the long-awaited drone by action cam maker GoPro that's foldable, has a detachable stabilizer which you can use for your handheld videos to greatly improve your shots, and well, as nice as that was, and I say was, DJI has managed to one-up GoPro with its newly announced foldable drone, Mavic Pro. Now, unless you're a hardcore GoPro loyalist, or you could really use that handheld stabilizer, you might want to have a serious look at what DJI, the undisputed leader in the drone space, has to offer. Now, I'm trying to be fair here to GoPro, but I'm sorry. The DJI Mavic Pro just smokes it. On the portability front, which is the huge selling feature of the GoPro Karma, Mavic Pro folds down to be even more compact. In fact, the company says it's not much larger than your standard water bottle. The promotional video actually shows it tucked into the lower back pocket of a bicyclist. That is pretty remarkable. This thing is not tiny, I would say, but it's pretty darn small. Remember, until recently, with the Karma drone and now this Mavic Pro, the kind of drones that most of us would want are kind of cumbersome. They're the kind of things that you leave at home because unless you're specifically out to shoot footage, you're probably not going to bring it with you. So these new drones are designed to pretty much go wherever you want to go that you might want to capture great footage. This exciting new offering from DJI has a 4K camera on the front, a visual navigation system to help you keep from crashing into things, a 7-kilometer range, that's 4.3 miles by the way, a 27-minute flight time, and when you compare it to Karma, it's frankly no comparison. The Karma, you may recall, needs a compatible GoPro camera, so that brings its cost to just about the price of a Mavic Pro, or even higher. Its range is just 1 kilometer, that's just 0.62 miles, and flight time is just 20 minutes. So the Mavic Pro clearly beats it when it comes to range and flight time, and I guess you have to decide for yourself whether or not you're going to like that camera that's built into the Mavic Pro, or being able to add your own from GoPro is what you want to do. Remember, back in the day, you had to put a GoPro on a DJI Phantom. It didn't have its own built-in camera, but then they developed those, and that made GoPro really nervous. So GoPro got into the drone market, but here's DJI now with an awesome drone with its own camera that kind of smashes the Karma, unfortunately. According to DJI founder and CEO Frank Wang, quote, DJI has spent a decade making it easier for anyone to fly, and by rethinking everything about how a drone looks, we have created an entirely new type of aerial platform for anyone to explore their creativity, end quote. Mavic Pro's new flight autonomy system uses 5 cameras, GPS, and GLONASS navigation, along with 2 ultrasonic rangefinders, redundant sensors, and 24 computing cores to do all it can do to keep things from going really badly. Now remember, of course, you're going to crash the drone at some point, but being able to avoid obstacles, that's going to help greatly. They've made it so you can control the Mavic Pro with gestures, mostly so you can shoot selfies. And with its active track mode, you can tell it to focus on a subject while you concentrate on flying, and it handles the videography for you. Its terrain mode lets you track your subject while maintaining a consistent height above the ground from between 1 to 33 feet, and its sports mode kicks things into high gear at up to 40 miles per hour, also known as 64.8 kilometers per hour. DJI has developed its smallest ever camera system with a new 3-axis gimbal for stabilization. It has a 12-megapixel 4K camera that can focus as closely as 19 inches. The camera can be flipped 90 degrees to shoot in portrait orientation and can shoot stills in DNG RAW. It has a new, much smaller controller to go with this much smaller drone, of course. And if that's not cool enough, DJI has also announced its DJI goggles, so users can fly their Mavic Pro with an 85-degree field of view in full 1080p HD resolution. The awesome DJI Mavic Pro will be available starting October 15, 2016 for $999 US, and starting in November 2016, it'll be available in Apple stores as well as on their website. You know, I loved that Karma drone when it was announced, but the Mavic Pro just looks to be so much more capable and a lot more awesome. For me, the only thing that would sway me towards the GoPro Karma would be that stabilizer that pops out of it. I mean, with that, you can open up a whole other world of stabilized shooting. Otherwise, if you didn't need something like that, I would say DJI Mavic Pro all the way. I tell you, GoPro just can't catch a break. You know, its competitors keep one-upping them before they even get a chance to make some sales. But I think their possible saving grace is going to be brand recognition. If a lot of people are really into the GoPro brand, or they've just heard of it and just haven't heard of DJI for some reason, then they might go with the Karma. It's a cool drone, and there's a lot of cool things it can do. They just hope you don't hear about the Mavic Pro, do they? Well, you just did. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 111 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show, just like I did with Jack's question. But if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, feel free to email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, and I hope you do, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 112. Well, it's f/8 2/50 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
On the portability front, we have a blooper. On the portability front, again, this is how it goes, people. Company president Kazuto Yamaki, in an interview with French president. No, he's not talking to the French president. I mean, maybe he does, but I think it's probably unlikely.